Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Parts of Iowa will soon be abuzz with not one but two special cicada broods. That's something that hasn't happened for over 200 years. Later this hour, we'll hear from Iowa's state entomologist, Robin Prusner, about these fascinating creatures and about which part of Iowa will experience two special cicada broods emerging at the same time. Also, Lee Rude, watchdog columnist for the Des Moines Register, on her experience investigating online romance scammers. And of course, we have to talk about basketball sensation Caitlin Clark. Wow, what a game. But first, let's get up to speed on what's been happening at the Iowa State House this week. Aaron Murphy joins me, Des Moines Bureau Chief of the Gazette. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. This is the first funnel week, the end of the first funnel week, right? Explain what that means.
Yeah, so what these funnels are, and there's a couple of them during the session, and they're basically deadlines where pieces of legislation have to have advanced to a certain level in order for them to remain eligible for consideration moving forward for the rest of the session. And these are designed to keep legislators focusing on and prioritizing the bills that they actually want to get moving and get done during a session. So the ones that maybe aren't priorities or don't have enough support, those don't make the deadline. They get put in the shelf and you don't have to worry about them anymore. You can focus on other bills. So this first funnel, a bill has to have been passed out of the first two steps in the legislative process, and that's out of a subcommittee panel and one full committee. Budget bills aren't subject to this, and there's always legislative tricks and tools that leaders can use if they want to resurrect one. But largely speaking, this is a deadline that makes some bills still alive and some bills no longer up for consideration.
Yeah, this is the time when we get narrowed down. There's so many bills up to this point in the first month of the session here. Now we get a narrowing here, a winnowing of those bills. Let's talk about some of the more high-profile bills that you've been covering especially. Rob Sand is the lone Democratic statewide elected office holder in Iowa. And now we have more legislation introduced and advanced this week that would limit the state auditor's office. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so what this one would do, and I think you said another one in there, and that's a good point, because there was a bill last year that was introduced and passed into law that that also put some constraints on the auditor's duties. This new one this week, what it simply does is allows a government agency who has to conduct an annual audit have an audit conducted of their office. They can, instead of having the state auditor's office do that, they would have the ability to hire a private accountant, a CPA, to do that audit instead. And then that would get filed with the auditor's office, but the auditor's office wouldn't have anything to do with it. Now, it should be pointed out, and the author of this bill, who is Republican Senator Mike Bussolo from Ankeny, has pointed out that this is already practiced for many other areas of government, local school districts, cities, county government entities. They can already do this, and many do. There are people who feel that this is different at the state level, where you now have more partisan-led offices. As you noted, Rob Sand is the only Democrat who's a state office holder. And now the other Republican-led offices in state government would, under this bill, have the option to not have the Democratic state auditor conduct an audit of their office, and that they would instead be able to hire a private CPA to do that work is instead. And so there are people who are critical of this bill who see politics in it.
Yes, including, first and foremost, the state auditor, Rob Sand, himself.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. He had a press conference this week to talk about both of these bills, this new one. And then he said that his office ran into the first example of having an issue with the law that was passed a year ago that constrained some of the information that they could request. And the state parole board in their audit, recent audit, refused to provide some information to the auditor's office, citing last year's law. And there's a back and forth about that. But the point being that, yes, the auditor's office, Rob Sand, has raised some flags about these bills and the impact they're having on the auditor's office.
Aaron, let's move on to a proposal to make birth control available through a pharmacist. This is without a physician's prescription, once again being considered by Iowa lawmakers, a measure proposed by Governor Reynolds with, I guess, bipartisan support.
Yeah, and it's noteworthy that Governor Reynolds has proposed this for a few years running now. It's run into hurdles in the House Republican caucus. The Senate actually passed it last year. So it'll be interesting to see if this is the year that this proposal finally gets over the finish line. I talked to the bill manager very recently about that, and she's optimistic that this will be the year that it passes, but also wouldn't make any predictions. So we'll see. But that's been an interesting one to follow.
Mm-hmm. Traffic cameras and hands-free devices, also an issue this week you wrote about, specifically State Senator Brad Zahn of Urbandale. His latest effort to address some traffic issues ties these together. Tell us what that's about. And you call it his white whale, something he's been pursuing for years.
Yeah, this has been Senator Zahn's pet issue for many, many years, ever since he got a traffic camera ticket from when his son was driving his car, as he tells the story every year. And it just hasn't, over the years, had quite enough support to get passed. And so his strategy this year has been to combine that bill with another one, a similar traffic safety bill that also has had some level of support but hasn't quite gotten across the finish line. And that's a bill that would require drivers to only use their mobile devices using hands-free technology. So you couldn't use, hold your hand in your phone for any, your phone in your hand for any use while you're driving. Similarly, that bill has had some support that hasn't passed. So Senator Zahn's strategy this year has been to combine those two with the hopes that, collecting the support that each one has might enable them to add up those votes and have enough to pass them out of the Senate and the Iowa House. And whether that's going to happen, we'll see. It just very narrowly passed out of committee by a 10-8 vote. So it's still hovering right on that line.
Mm-hmm. A bit of deja vu on this next issue. Iowa Republican lawmakers have advanced a bill in 2024 in this session that would make numerous changes to the state's election laws. Wait, Aaron, didn't we just have a slew of election law changes?
Yeah, and that was one of the points that one of the Democrats made this week at the State House was that, look, we just had big changes. Iowans voted under those rules for the first time here in this last election. It went well. Why are we doing this all over again? But this again would it would ban the use of absentee ballot drop boxes. It would move up the deadline for absentee ballots to be received by the local election offices. So more changes that are fairly significant that would take place if this bill is passed.
Yeah, and the bill would. Well, on the ballot boxes issue there, Representative Bobby Kaufman behind this bill says his goal is to maintain the highest level of election integrity, but he also at the same time says he does not believe Iowa has widespread voter fraud. Many would see a contradiction there. But this bill would also restrict ballot objections for federal candidates. It would not allow the state to disqualify a candidate for federal office because of a felony conviction. Well, of course, that rings a bell because we could have a former president with multiple felony convictions at some point here, right?
Yep, and this is, pardon me, so part of something we're seeing nationwide, where early on there were there was at least one, and forgive me for not knowing the official number off the top of my head, but I know at least one state where President Trump was the state ruled that President Trump should not appear on the ballot, and so now you have states like Iowa that are being proactive in passing laws that would prevent that from happening, and that's essentially what this is intended to do. And Representative Kaufman might make the argument that he's not doing it for a specific candidate, but there's obviously, with the timing and the way the legislation is drawn, that's that's clearly what's in mind here. And like I said, so the Iowa among those states that is taking proactive steps to ensure that any effort to keep President Trump off the ballot would not be successful.
Right. And I think Colorado and Maine were the states that you were trying to call to mind here. And I think the U.S. Supreme Court to rule on that in some fashion in the coming days. But Representative Adam Zabner, quoted in your article, a Democrat of Iowa City, on this bill, says it takes quite a lot of nerve to call a bill an election integrity bill when the point of the bill is to let felons run for office, and particularly someone like Donald Trump, who has so little integrity, quoting from Zabner there. And also to mention, Bobby Kaufman worked as a senior advisor for Trump's presidential campaign in Iowa, but maintains that this bill has, quote, nothing to do with Donald Trump.
Yeah, right. And like I said, that is something Representative Kaufman can say, but the language of the bill, the intent and the timing is pretty clear. And I might add, when you're talking about integrity and former President Trump's spot on the ballot, also given his continued and unfounded claims about the 2020 election results, there's also a little bit of a conflict there as well.
Okay, Aaron Murphy, thank you very much for your insights on a few of the bills advancing during this first funnel week at the Iowa State House. Aaron Murphy, Des Moines Bureau Chief with the Gazette. Always a pleasure, Aaron. Have a wonderful weekend. Get some rest. I imagine you need some.
I could use some catching up and get ready for another week, busy week next week. Thanks, Ben.
We're going to take a short break and be back with more of this News Buzz edition. I'm Ben Kiefer. Stay tuned.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the Extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
Can we heal the environment? In Kansas, we're working on it. Up From Dust is a podcast about how humans reshaped the world to fit urban landscapes and agricultural needs. We'll meet the people who are rolling up their sleeves to find more sustainable ways forward. Listen to Up From Dust from KCUR, part of the NPR network.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, in just a few months, parts of Iowa will be abuzz with not one, but two special cicada broods. It's something that hasn't happened for over 200 years. Let's find out more from Robin Prusner. Robin is Iowa's state entomologist with the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Stewardship. Robin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us, what is this special event coming up? And I guess first and foremost, we have to know what a cicada brood is anyway.
That's a great question. We throw that term brood around quite a bit. It would be the equivalent of saying someone is a freshman or a sophomore in high school. It's a way of grouping insects of the same species but are doing the same thing at the same time. So we've got two broods. We call one brood 13, which confusingly enough is a 17-year-long life cycle, and it will be emerging in eastern Iowa. At the same time, we have what's called brood 19, which is a 13-year life cycle cicada that will be emerging in southern Iowa. So kind of an overlap of two broods, and it doesn't happen very often, maybe once a blue moon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this will only be experienced by certain Iowa counties, the double broods emerging at the same time, certain counties in southeast Iowa.
Yep, yep. So if you go down to the far corner of southeast Iowa, that is where you're going to see the overlap. We can go back to the records from the previous emergence in 2011, for instance, of that 13-year. And that was reported as far north as the Bloomfield area and then in Van Buren and Lee counties. So I would expect the 13-year to be there as well as that 17-year-long cicada. The 17-year-long cicada will actually be farther up in Iowa, all the way up to the Waterloo, Cedar Falls area, over to Decorah. We would expect to see them there.
Okay. Cicadas are something very common here in the Midwest, in Iowa. We know their sounds very well. For those in Iowa experiencing these two broods emerging at the same time, will people notice without knowing about it? How will you notice?
The sound is probably the first way that people realize it's happening. In Iowa, our periodical cicadas tend to sing during the day, so kind of late morning into early afternoon, where our annual cicadas that occur every year tend to sing more at dusk and into the evening. So we'll have a longer singing period, and if they emerge in the mass hundreds of thousands and millions of numbers, then the volume definitely is turned up. In a real heavy infestation and you stand under a tree with a lot of cicadas, it could be as much as 90 decibels under that tree.
Wow. I mean, that almost rivals a jet plane, doesn't it? I mean, a jet plane is more, but I've been out on my back deck for these would be the annual cicadas, having like a barbecue out in the backyard in the evening. And just that sometimes it's hard to speak over them.
It is. There's a lot of wives' tales associated with it. Some people say from the first time you hear that cicada sing, it's 6 weeks till the first frost. Doesn't really work out that way, but it's usually recognized as that the summer is half over when our annual cicadas come out. But our periodical cicadas will actually be out in May and June. And they will begin to emerge when it's about 64 degrees, 8 inches down in the soil. They really like it when there's a warm rain, and a majority of them could actually emerge all in one night. But from that May into June is when we're going to see our periodicals, and then our annual cicadas start showing up in July and August. So we'll also have an extended period of all of that racket.
Mm-hmm. So these are some of the longest living insects in the world. The one brood you described, 17 years underground, the other 13, and then we have our annual cicadas. Explain this long life cycle and why it makes sense in evolutionary, in survival terms. What's going on?
I think it's widely believed by entomologists that when something emerges in mass like this, you overwhelm your predators. So those animals out there that like to eat the cicadas, they are going to get their full, and there are still going to be cicadas left over to mate and carry on. And so I guess this is natural selection at its finest. When these big emergences have happened and everybody can get their fill of them, so to speak, but yet there's still enough to mate successfully and deposit those eggs.
Mm-hmm. Why do they have to spend so long underground? And they're feeding off the roots of trees, right?
Yes, that's true. Even our annual cicadas, while we have them every year, they'll spend 2 to 5 years underground. Periodicals, for whatever reason, they found a way to stay down there longer and emerge all at the same time within reason. I don't think there is a ton of nutrition with what they're feeding on, the roots or the rootlets of our deciduous trees. And of course, it's cooler in the ground. They live mostly 18 to 24 inches deep. Insects are cold-blooded, and they can only move when they're relatively warm. And so I think that also just slows them down by being that deep in the soil.
Are they hurting any of these trees?
When they're feeding on the roots, I think they're taking in so little, it is of no consequence to the tree. Now, during those precious few weeks of their life cycle when they're above ground, they do also like to drink the sap of trees. They drink off the xylem of trees, which is usually the water and nutrients being carried up the tree from the roots. When they do heavy feeding, and then of course they make their little egg niches in the twigs, that can cause flagging of the leaves, so the leaves don't look too happy and may cause some leaf drop. But if the trees are generally healthy, in a good environment, they'll continue on and not be a problem. If you've got a tree that's already in decline for other reasons, this could be another nail in the tree coffin.
Mm-hmm. Can cicadas harm people or animals or any other beings?
I think the only harm they can do is scare you. if you pick one up, you're going to discover that they've got little spines on their legs that they use for clinging on to the trees, and they may feel sharp to you, which some people may describe as being bitten, but they can't actually bite you. Essentially, their mouth parts are a really long straw that they use to put into the woody material and drink the tree juice, so to speak. Can't harm a human, but it may be surprising at how prickly they may feel.
Mm-hmm. How are you planning to mark this event? And tell us the last time anything like this took place, these two special cicada broods emerging at the same time.
For me, I have already informed my better half that we're going to take a mini vacation over to the Chicago area, where we should definitely see the overlap of these two broods in big numbers. He knows me. He knows in 2014, when we had what's called Brood 3 here in central Iowa, we spent every weekend that we could during that time period out and about exploring and checking it out and taking pictures and generally being fascinated. So I made a map in 2014 around the Sailorville Lake area where we saw high numbers. So that, you know, God willing and the river don't rise, I'm here in 2031, we're going to go back out and see if we can run across those cicadas. That's eggs were laid in 2014. I'm already buying my t-shirt merch off Etsy, so I might just wear that for a few months to work and they'll tolerate me.
Do you have a nice catchy slogan or a picture?
I kind of really dig, I have to go realistic. So the periodical cicadas have red eyes, where our annual cicadas have black eyes. So I'm kind of picky on my merch. It's got to have the red eyes or I'm going to have to adjust it. And I might just go outside and scream with the cicadas for a while this spring.
Okay. Robin Prusner, thank you very much for this information about the coming very special emergence of two cicada broods. Robin says Brood 13 and Brood 19 in southeast Iowa. They will overlap. It hasn't happened for over 200 years. 1803, did I remember that date correctly, Robin?
I think you did. I think you did.
Okay. Robin Prusner, Iowa's state entomologist. Thank you very much, Robin.
Thank you.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Hope you had a meaningful Valentine's Day this week, expressing appreciation for those in your life that make living better. Investigative journalist Lee Root of the Des Moines Register took the occasion to write about one particular scammer who stands accused of swindling via online dating sites, of stealing more than women's hearts. Lee Root joins me. Hi, Lee.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
You write of this Des Moines man, John F. Clark, has had his luck with the ladies, but this Valentine's Day, that good fortune is petering out. Clark has a long rap sheet going back to the 1980s. Tell us about it.
Well, he's basically, for most of his adult life, perpetrated a number of scams, but particularly romance scams. He's been doing this for years and years, and his MO is, essentially meeting single women on different dating sites in several states. I think I counted five and six different Iowa counties where he's been doing this. And, ingratiating himself, building trust with them, and then quickly putting pressure on them to give over their cellular phones where he accesses their accounts and financial information. And there he is able to charge things like new iPhones or Apple Watches and then sell or pawn them.
He has a lot of victims, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. We found victims in Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, Kansas, Minnesota. I quoted a couple women in my column, but I talked to quite a few, and they all told me essentially three things: that they thought they were being careful, that they wanted to be kind, but that they ignored red flags that came up right away in their dealings with him.
This is how these swindlers can be so successful, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's a pretty kind of classic example of what you read about with romance scams, which, unlike some other frauds that are being perpetrated in Iowa, they're really escalating. And I think they were the imposter scams were the fourth leading type of fraud in Iowa last year. And federal authorities and groups like the American Bankers Association have been really trying to raise attention about these kinds of scams because they're really taking off. You can have somebody who's a local offender, but also you have people overseas who are trying to do this on social media sites as well.
Lee, why is catching these types of offenders often so difficult?
Well, in John Clark's case, he had been doing this for so long that at a certain point he quit using his real name. So he was giving different aliases to women. So they tried as best they could to like see if he had a social media profile or check him out in Iowa court's system. But if he didn't really use his real name, they came up with nothing.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the damage suffered by his victims, not only financial, but also in terms of emotional harm, trauma.
Yeah, yeah. That was the big disappointment for all these women, quite a few of whom were pretty teary-eyed when I talked to them. Sometimes he would, only know somebody for a month or two, but still manage to get thousands of dollars from them through their credit. One woman I talked to lost more than $20,000. And then they're left just feeling sort of extremely disappointed and heartbroken that they were taken advantage of. All these women were single women who didn't have a lot of money. One woman told me that she had to have her grown son pay her cellular phone bill that he'd run up all kinds of charges on. So it's just really devastating for them and disappointing.
You write that Clark's luck seems to be running out. How so?
Well, these women were putting all kinds of pressure on authorities to do something. They had come together on their own on social media sites. And he's been arrested. He's facing probation violation charges in Polk and Lynn and Black Hawk counties. He's been offered a plea deal of 15 years just in Black Hawk County, and he would face 5 years in both Lynn and Polk counties because he's done. But also the FBI is investigating him as well, and that's reflected in Iowa court documents. So he's in big trouble, and he's got some hearings coming up in April where he's going to have to decide what to do.
Lee, not much time, but leave us with some quick tips on how to protect ourselves and loved ones from such scams.
Well, I think with all things, you really need to take your time when you're on a dating site. You need to be aware of people who don't want to meet you in person or introduce you to their family, friends, or coworkers. Goes without saying, but you never want to provide access to any your phone or your financial accounts, and you don't want to give people early on information that can make you vulnerable later on, because these kinds of predators really prey on things that people tell them. They study people's profiles and they, you know, manipulate them into trusting them. You just really, really need to be cautious. That's all I need to say. And because you're cautious, it doesn't mean that you're not a caring person. It just means you're careful.
Right. And if you get wind of a loved one who may be wrapped up in something like this, you can pass on these tips.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you suspect a scam, what should you do? Who should you contact, Lee?
Well, I think first of all, you want to make a complaint to the Consumer Protection Division at the Iowa Attorney General's office. And then if you've lost money, you definitely want to go to your local police department and make a complaint.
Investigative journalist Lee Rood, watchdog columnist for the Des Moines Register. Always good to have you on with your words of warning and your stories, Lee. Thank you.
Thank you for spreading the word.
Coming up after a short break, it took her just over 2 minutes to score 8 points and soar to the top of the scoring chart. Coming up, Jeff Linder of the Gazette on basketball sensation Caitlin Clark. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's your Friday News Buzz. Stay tuned.
Can we heal the environment? In Kansas, we're working on it. Up From Dust is a podcast about how humans reshaped the world to fit urban landscapes and agricultural needs. We'll meet the people who are rolling up their sleeves to find more sustainable ways forward. Listen to Up From Dust from KCUR, part of the NPR network.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, if you watched the game last night, which I did, I was completely enthralled. It happened, though, very quickly before a sellout crowd of nearly 15,000 at Carver Hawkeye Arena in Iowa City, along with a worldwide audience of Peacock streaming subscribers. Just over 2 minutes into the game, Iowa Hawkeyes women's basketball sensation Caitlin Clark became number one on the NCAA women's basketball scoring chart. Let's listen to that moment.
Recovered by Gabby Marshall. Here comes Clark. How will she go for history? There it is! The all-time leading scorer in women's college basketball.
Joining me now, Jeff Linder, sports writer with the Gazette. Hi, Jeff. You were at Carver Hawkeye, right?
Yeah, I was. Ears are still ringing a little bit. It was it was just as loud as it sounds on the recording you just played.
The fourth-ranked Hawkeyes outscored Michigan 106-89. Clark, you quote in your article about this, I don't know if I could have scripted it any better here. So describe that shot, because she set her sights on what is called a logo three for the record and did just that, didn't she?
Yeah, and it's certainly nothing unusual that Caitlin did, at least in Caitlin's world. I mean, it's a tough shot for any of the rest of us mere mortals, but Debbie Antonelli, broadcaster from last night, got a tape measure out after the game and had somebody out and was out with the tape measure and 33 feet for the record breaking shot. So yeah, it was probably the perfect way for Caitlin to break the record. Yeah, it was a long shot like that.
Yeah, her tally now stands at 3,569. The remarkable thing here is she makes it seem, as you point out in your reporting, just like another thing, like she's shooting a free throw. In fact, doesn't she say that, shooting from just inside the 3-point line is harder for her than hitting these longer 3-pointers?
Yeah. And it's kind of, kind of basketball knowledge that the worst shot you can take is just inside the 3-point line, because the risk and reward is so much lower than stepping back a little bit. But I think Clark's, I think Caitlin's more comfortable shooting from, 26, 28, 30 feet than she is from 22 for some reason. And, I don't know if it has something to do with her stroke or whatever, but, that's just, that's her sweet spot.
That big record was not the only record she broke last night, right?
Right. She's now the Iowa single game leader with her 49 points. Megan Gustafson had the record with 48 in the Big Ten tournament in 2018. And then she broke the Carver record, men's or women's, that Hannah Stolke, her teammate, had scored 47 points just last week.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting when she is shooting as well as she was last night. I've heard her quoted saying, "The basketball hoop just looks bigger." In your coverage of sports, translate that. What does that mean? Obviously, the basketball hoop stays the same size.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I played, I never had that problem. The basket rim always looked small to me. Yeah, when you've got it going, the target seems a little bit bigger, a little bit easier to shoot at. And that's just kind of the mentality of a good shooter. And that's just kind of the role she gets on sometimes. And she certainly was on that in the first quarter last night. 23 points was just otherworldly. It was something to watch.
Right. And she does a great job assisting the other players, being a team player. Talk about that, what we saw last night, and put that into context of this season. She is beloved by her players because she often dishes off and allows others to score a lot of points, too.
Yeah, she had 13 assists last night. And in addition to being the number one scorer of all time in NCAA history, she's in the top 10. I think she's number six now in assists, which is crazy to comprehend. I think between her points and her assists, she was responsible for 79 points last night. And it's just head shaking. And, I don't know. It's going to take some time for people to really wrap their minds around, what she's done.
Yeah. She's not just a great player. And as you point out in your reporting, she's so different. Commonly earning plaudits such as transcendent and generational. Describe a little bit more about what makes her so different, not just a great player, but that makes her transcendent.
She just plays with panache, I guess you'd say. She plays with such a flair, the long shots, the slick passes. I just don't think there's anybody like her. When she came to Iowa 3 years ago, I mean, she was just different. And people say, who does she remind you of? Whether it's, a Sue Bird or somebody like that, Diane Taurasi. I saw Pete Maravich play a little bit, and he's the all-time men's player, leading scorer. I kind of put her in that category. She's just different than everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And do you see this rubbing off on the other players? Of course, Iowa ranked fourth now, but when you have a player that plays with such panache and confidence, it can only rub off on other players, right?
Yeah, I think so. You see the confidence that a Kate Martin plays with, or a Hannah Stolke, and some of the kids off the bench. Yeah, I think that has to rub off, knowing that every game, every time you take the floor, you've got the best player in the country on your team, and that certainly enhances your chances of winning.
It's interesting. Coach Bluder had an idea. This happened hours before the game. Iowa players sat in a circle and were asked by Coach Bluder to say something nice about Caitlin Clark that wasn't about basketball. And talk about that, because she is just a marvelous person, basketball sensation aside, isn't she?
Yeah, she loves her teammates. She's very generous with her teammates. I'm sure you're aware of all the NIL money, NIL gifts that she gets. But, for her birthday, she gave her teammates new shoes, new basketball shoes to wear. And just a lot of that. She's very active. She loves kids. She always takes time afterwards to sign, you know, as much as she can in such a short period of time. And she's a different kid, and mm-hmm. almost all for the good.
Yeah, and kid is not incorrect. 22 years old, showing this amount of maturity in handling this overwhelming fame that she has across the country and across the world. That's remarkable too, isn't it?
Yeah, and she came into the press conference last night after the game. None of the other players were with her. Coach Bluder was still out in the hallway. She comes in. She's just so comfortable in front of the media, in front of the public. And she just sat and said, okay, what you got for me? And it's really press conferences with her are a lot of fun. And she talks really fast, which makes it hard to keep up with her and taking notes. But, she's from a media standpoint, she's great.
I started crying watching that video just because, like, I'm just filled with so much gratitude and love, and the way these fans support women's basketball is so much special. It's so special, and yeah, there's been so many famous and cool people and people I idolize, you know, growing up that say a lot of really nice things about me. But when it's people that have had your back through the ups and downs and been there every step of the journey, whether it was good or bad, and have seen the hard days, have seen the good days, and I think that's when it means the most.
Caitlin Clark is eligible to return to Iowa for a fifth season because of an NCAA grant for athletes in the classes of 21 through 24. This was due to the COVID pandemic. I wonder, we don't know that decision yet, and I guess perhaps comment on perhaps what you think she may be weighing.
Oh, boy. there's a lot to dig through there with that. I asked her last summer, and she said on a scale at that time, on a scale from 1 to 10, she was a 6 with the more likely of coming back. I think the closer we get, I think more people think that she's probably going to go to the WNBA draft. I don't have any justification for saying that, just a hunch. If she does go, she'll be the most likely the number one draft pick by the Indiana Fever. And, there are good points for her to go, good points for her to stay. The NIL money is still going to be here, but, you know, she's going to get a lot of good endorsements if she goes to the WNBA as well. Those aren't going to go away. I imagine the Fever might be able to sweeten the pot with a signing bonus. I don't know exactly how that works. But, there's pros and cons. A lot of her... the veteran teammates that she's got will be gone next year. So she'll be bringing together a new roster. So, I don't know what she's going to do. If I had to say, I'd say it's probably more likely that she'll be in Indianapolis next year than in Iowa City, but, don't rule it out.
All right. Jeff Linder, he was there at Carver Hawkeye when the record was broke yesterday evening by Caitlin Clark becoming the number one NCAA women's basketball scorer of all time. Jeff Linder, sports writer with the Gazette. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And that just about does it for this News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News for this February 16th. Did you know that on this date... in 1923, the burial chamber of King Tut was opened. That was in the Valley of the Kings near Luxor in Egypt. Joining us now, someone who regularly opens chambers of exquisite, often golden, new music, along with old musical gems. And as a bonus, Mark Simmet doesn't come with those pesky curses, does he, Mark?
Well, no guarantees.
All right. Mark's here, of course, to groove us into the weekend. You've got a couple of tunes with us, for us. What do you have to start out?
Well, first up, a band called The Steel Wheels. They are from the Blue Ridge Mountain area of Virginia, Americana band from around there. They have a new album out, and this particular song is, it's still Americana, but it's kind of more pop-leaning, almost soulful in the vocals, and it's called Hero.
I've been trying not to let my feelings show.